Hi, we're here with Andrea Chang and Connie Nordhelm Woolridge in conversation about different approaches to nonfiction. And I'll let them talk about the books that we're going to be discussing today. Andrea?
Thanks. I'm the author of Etched in Clay, The Life of Dave, Enslaved Potter and Poet. It is my first nonfiction book, and it was a very interesting experience for me.
And I'm Connie, and I'm going to be talking about two books. The most recent one I wrote is called Just Fine the Way They Are. It's a picture book, and it's a run through 200 years of the history of transportation, mostly set in the Midwest and centered on the National Road. And then my first longer work of nonfiction called The Brave Escape of Edith Wharton. It's a biography for junior high school readers about Edith Wharton.
Okay, great. Well, both of you have written biographies of people who are no longer alive to interview. Could you talk a little bit about what it's like to write about someone based on the things they've left behind, Connie?
Well, I'm really comfortable working with documents like letters and biographies and things like that. My training is as a librarian, so I love being in libraries and working in archives. I think I've gotten pretty used to trying to figure out which of these documents are the most reliable, and might be interesting that autobiographies are the most unreliable thing I've found, that people's memories can be very slippery, and you always have to recheck the facts there. Also, if someone's writing an autobiography, they obviously are thinking someone's going to be reading it, so they're trying to portray a certain part of themselves. And interestingly, with the Edith Wharton book, her fiction was the place where I found her to be the most transparent, not her letters, but her fiction, which was very interesting for me.
Interesting. Andrea?
Well, when I was writing about Dave, the interesting thing was that there isn't really too much to go on. There are bills of sale, because when a person was enslaved, you could find information about how much the person was sold for and who the owners were. With Dave, we were lucky because we had the pots. He was a potter, and we have some whole pots and also shards of pots that he left behind with his own writings on them, with his poems, his couplets, and his name. But besides that, there was a lot of guesswork, because there weren't, like with Connie's book, there weren't letters to go on. There weren't a lot of books already to use. I did use Carolina Clay by Leonard Todd a lot as a resource. But in Leonard Todd did a lot of conjecture, and he says so in his book. And I think that's the approach that I took, because when people are not in a position of power, often there's very little left behind. So if we don't go on what we have, those stories would just simply not be told, and we would only have stories of people who left a lot behind.
Well, that's a good segue, Andrea, into what sense of responsibility do you feel toward the subject of your biography?
I feel an incredible sense of responsibility, especially when you have children who are going to be the readers of the book, to try to portray the life of the person and the times the way I think they were. But this is, again, the way I think they were. Now, I read a lot of slave narratives, for example, that were not written by Dave or not about Dave. They were just about a lot of people that lived at the same time. But I'm very aware when I read the WPA slave narratives that I don't know who was asking the questions. I don't know how the questions were asked. I don't know how the person who responded felt toward the person who was asking the questions. So all those things leave a lot that we just will never know. But I guess I feel compelled to tell those stories anyway, because if they aren't told, there's a huge number of stories that will simply never be told.
And how about you, Connie?
Well, you know, it's interesting that just recently on the work I'm currently about, I'm going to be interviewing the great-grandchildren of my subject, and it's actually making me a little bit nervous, because I'm finding, as I think about that coming up, that I might be wanting to please them, to write something that will be pleasing to them, rather than finding their great-grandmother. Mm-hmm. So I guess that helped me focus a little bit on what you asked, because I feel that what I want to do is find the subject I want to And in my case, it's interesting, Andrea, you were saying you had very little to go on with Edith Wharton. I had an avalanche of information. Mm-hmm. So it was more a question of peeling back the details and trying to find the essence of the person in a way that would be engaging to young readers without warping her life making that anything less than it would be with all the details.
I did want to add one thing. I did write a biography, a picture book biography of a person who's still alive, with whom I was able to have conversations. But when I finished the book and I was offered a contract on it, actually, the person didn't want the book written and didn't like the story that I told. And so I never signed the contract and the book was not published. So that's a whole nother aspect to writing biography.
Wow. So where is the line for you between creative nonfiction and fiction?
I think it's a very blurry line, actually. And I remember the first time that I read Connie's manuscript about Edith Wharton. I don't know if you remember this, Connie, but I took it home and I very carefully marked all the places that I thought Connie should add dialogue because I thought it would make it more lively.
Right.
And as a fiction, primarily a fiction writer, I was used to adding dialogue wherever I wanted it. And I thought, well, this is a little bit dry. Let's liven it up.
Right.
And then Connie looked at me and she said, I can't just add dialogue that I don't know that a person ever said. So that really made me realize that, wow, now that we're both writing nonfiction, we have different approaches to it. And I think when I wrote the story of Dave the Potter, I wrote it in first person from the point of view of Dave and a lot of other people in his life. So automatically there's a fiction to that because I am not those people. So I think that's why I call the genre creative nonfiction rather than historical fiction, because to me, historical fiction, the setting is real, but the people aren't. And this is not historical fiction. Dave was a real person. And the facts of his life are true the way that I read them and the way I could discover them. But still, I have no idea what people said. I have no idea what they thought. And that is fictionalized.
Mm-hmm. So Connie, you've obviously thought about this line between creative nonfiction and fiction a lot.
Right. And Andrea and I take very different approaches, and we kid each other a lot about this, actually, because I like set boundaries. As Andrea mentioned, I never invent dialogue or incidents, and I would not take on a subject such as Dave the Potter because there just wouldn't be enough for me to write anything. It would be a silent work is what it would be.
Okay.
So I think creativity for me is about pulling the story out of the facts that are there. And I often have to look back at some long biographies, especially in the case of Edith Wharton. There were at least three or four major biographies and a bunch of other minor biographies about her. And the most recent one was over 700 pages long. So for me, bringing that story to young adult readers would be in picking the narrative out of all of those details, because adult writers want to put everything on the page. They want every last letter. If they know the person sneezed on July 19th, they have found that in some letter, they want to get that in. And for me, I want to sweep all of that aside and just get to the narrative, get to the sweep of the life, what the life was about, and clear away the rubble. It was interesting. I was talking to someone the other day who had just read my book, and she had also read Hermione Lee's adult biography, which is the 700-pager. And she said, oh, I found things in your book that weren't in Hermione Lee's. Well, I'm not sure about that because Hermione Lee covered just about everything. It's possible. But I think what she found was she saw things that she couldn't see in the more cluttered biography. So that for me is what creative nonfiction is, finding the story, finding the narrative, and telling it in an engaging way.
And to me, I think it's more of an additive. With Dave the Potter, it was. I put myself in the place of Dave and his wives and the slave owners, and I told the story through them. And I think that to me, it didn't feel so different from when I write fiction, because that's what I do with fiction. I put myself in the place of a character and I try to tell the story through that person, through what they say, what they do, how they move. And it was the same kind of thing for me as I was writing about Dave. It's just that I had read a lot about the time, so that, you know, I was kind of immersed in it when I took on that persona.
Mm-hmm. So Connie, what you were saying previously kind of leads to the next question. Each of you is written for both younger readers and older readers. Do you let the subject of a book dictate the reading level?
No, I wouldn't say the subject, because a lot of the people I've written about have had pieces of their lives that you would think might not be for children's consumption, let's say. I think it's the size of the story I want to tell, how many of the details I want to bring in. I wrote three nonfiction pieces, picture books, before I did Edith Wharton, and that format worked fine, that 32-page format. When I got to Edith Wharton, I sat down to do another picture book, and I found myself thinking, I need more room. I have more to say. And it was at that point that I pushed myself into unknown territory and launched on this longer biography, not knowing if I would ever be able to write it, because when you set out on something new, it's you often find yourself on shaky ground. So I would say it's more about the how much material I want to communicate rather than about the subject matter.
Interesting. How about for you, Andrea?
I think for me, the subject does dictate the reading level. I know when I first heard about Dave the Potter, and I went to the library and I got Leonard Todd's book and I read it, I did want to do a picture book about Dave. It was before Brian Collier's, the picture book that was published, was out, so I had not seen that. But I thought, oh, this is such a visual subject. It just begs for a picture book. It begs for illustration. And I really wanted to do that. But when I read about Dave, I thought, what to me is the most amazing thing about Dave's life is not only that he was an amazing potter, but that he dared to write on pots and sign his name at a time that he could have been severely punished for that. And so I thought, that's the heroism to me. And in a picture book, which is generally for younger readers, I didn't think that I could communicate that. And so that's when I decided that this was not a subject that I could actually do in a picture book form. And I know others have, as you know, the gorgeous book about Dave the Potter. And I think it's a very successful book, but I think it doesn't emphasize what I have emphasized in my book, which is the actual learning to read and to write and to write on something like a pot that would be there forever after it was fired. So that's why I changed my mind, actually. That was not my original plan. My original plan was to do a picture book.
Huh, interesting. Well, that's kind of the reverse of this question, which is, have you ever written about something for one set of readers and wished you could revisit it for readers who were older or younger?
I mean, for me, no, I don't think so. Once I've told the story the way it comes to me, and I've worked on it, and I've molded it, and I've crafted it, I don't usually wish that I could revisit that for another age group. At least so far, that hasn't happened. I'm not saying that it couldn't, because in some ways, it seems that once you've done so much work and immersed yourself so much in something, you get a little more mileage out of it. But I have never really actually considered that. I don't know about you, Connie.
No, that's never happened to me either. I remember talking to someone, a nonfiction person, who tries to squeeze 3 or 4 pieces out of every research project. And I've always thought, well, that's very efficient, but I've never been able to do it. I will say that if I had lost my courage and forced myself to write a picture book about Edith Wharton, I have a feeling I would be sitting here telling you how much I regretted it and how much I wanted to put in. But I think maybe, as we said earlier, I think the subject, you begin to interact with the subject and the form comes to you. And if you start off on a wrong path, I think you find that out pretty quickly, as Andrea did and as I did. So,
and I have played around with form a lot. I mean, I've sometimes written something longer and then an editor will say, well, can you try this? Maybe she would work better as a picture book, and the reverse. So sometimes it's the suggestion of an editor, but sometimes I don't find that the suggestion works for me. Because generally I think that if the subject to me feels complex in a certain way that would require somebody to be maybe 9 years old or so to understand it, I don't feel like it's something I can do in a picture book, for example.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Connie, do you prefer writing for one group more than the rest?
Well, I would have answered that question differently before I wrote Edith Wharton, because that my age level, my audience was second grade and up, upper elementary school, and I felt perfectly suited to that age group. But no, I'll say no. The only regret I have is when I go on school visits, I always tell them that my audience is second grade up. I can go to upper elementary, junior high, high school, and they'll always say, oh, but the kindergartners and the first graders. And I wish I had a book for much younger readers that I could use, but it hasn't happened yet. So, so down to second grade is about as far as I go. And then I have pushed up into the junior high, high school, but not down yet. So, yeah.
And I like writing for a variety of ages. It really depends on what I'm writing about, but I do enjoy picture books because they're short and there's so much. They're almost like writing poetry. They're, every word counts, and that's a certain type of concentration that I just love. But then I also like working on the longer pieces.
Right.
So I kind of like going back and forth.
And it's a bit of a rest, I think, to do in both ways. You do a picture book, and the pace is different, and it's not such a long journey. So you can begin and end, and I think it is a rest for me. But I think also, Edith Wharton gave me a rest in the sense that when you do shorter works, you have to keep coming up with a different subject and a different subject and a different subject. And I was just latched onto this book for about 7 years, I would say. So,
yeah.
So in that sense, it was a rest from having to constantly come up with new subjects.
Mm-hmm. So Connie, could you talk about voice in fiction versus nonfiction?
You know, I don't think that the change from fiction to nonfiction is a problem for me in picture books. I write my nonfiction picture books in a very light style. I'm looking for humor, and I adopt different voices in order to get the story across. For Just Fine the Way They Are, I got ornery and crotchety and insisted that things are just fine the way they are, even though the message of the book is that things are never just fine the way they are. Change happens. So I use that voice to help convey the message. I had a huge problem with voice when I started off on Edith Wharton. I had to find a voice that could sustain the longer form. And you can't, when you talk to someone at a party and they tell anecdotes, you can listen to it for one or two anecdotes, but if they get launched on an hour's worth of anecdotes, it's not the kind of a voice that lends itself to that shorter narrative. And I had to find a voice that would stretch that. And I found myself thinking that my voice was boring. I was writing, and I knew I had to get in certain details, and I kept thinking, this is boring. Get with it. Get on with the subject. And it was hard for me to stretch that out. So, and the other thing that happened to me on Edith Wharton is I found that in the beginning chapters when she was younger, and someone who read the manuscript actually called me out on this, when she was younger, I used words and a voice that was meant for a younger audience. And then as I got to the end of her life, I was writing almost to adults, and it kept changing. And so what I did was, when I had the full manuscript, I revised chapter one, and then I went to the end and revised the last chapter. And then I went to chapter two, and then the second to the last chapter. And it was so that I could pull my voice to the proper place. And my editor, Dinah Stevenson, literally pulled me up by the hair. When she was editing the first chapter, she was making my words more grown up. She was making sentences longer, trying to clue me into the fact that my voice was changing over the course of the manuscript, and I needed to get that evened out. So that was a problem for me with the longer form.
Huh. Andrea, how about you, nonfiction versus fiction? Voice?
You know, it's funny, this whole thing about voice. I know many of the reviews of my books have commented on the voice and complimented the voice, and I honestly just have trouble talking about it because I think it's something that I don't do consciously at all. And like with Dave the Potter, you know, I don't know if voice means the various narrators, or, I mean, it's just, I can't wrap my head around what it actually means. And as often as I read people complimenting that aspect of my work, I don't know what I've done. So I really can't answer the question.
So do you think you can answer the next question then? What are some challenges when it comes to creating a strong voice in each?
You mean in fiction and nonfiction? I mean, to me, it's, I think I said a little bit earlier, in either fiction or nonfiction, I completely immerse myself in the character. And then when I'm writing, it's what the character says, what the character does, how that character feels. For example, her stomach may tighten up if she's nervous, or her face may feel hot if she's embarrassed, or what it might be. But I can't think of it any other way. And people have said to me, oh, your dialogue's amazing. Well, I mean, I like to listen to the way people talk. And when I'm writing, I think that's something that just comes to me. But how I do it, I can't really say. As far as fiction and nonfiction, I don't think it's very different from me. I write in first person a lot. I write in present tense a lot. And so it's a very immediate first person present tense. I don't know how to get more immediate than that. And I am right there inside that person. That's the only way I can describe it.
Mm-hmm. And that's interesting because most of my books are third person, which means what I'm looking for is the proper distance to be standing away, mm-hmm. so that I'm seeing just the right amount of things. Do I want to be very close and be right there in the action, which was sort of where I was with Just Fine the Way They Are. I don't talk about myself as a character in the book, but from the feel of the book, you feel like that narrator's voice is right there participating. And with Edith Wharton, I was a few steps back. And so I think for me, it might be a question of distance. But again, I do mostly third person, so it's mm-hmm. different from being in the first person.
Mm-hmm. So does that lead to some challenges in creating a strong voice, or different challenges?
Well, maybe, because as I told you with Just Fine, I was right up close, maybe as close as you can get to first person and still be in third person. And maybe it was the distance in the Edith Wharton that made me a little bit shakier about where I was standing, what I was seeing, who I was in relationship to this narrative that I was telling.
So when it comes to your nonfiction, do you find your subjects or do they find you? Connie?
I've got a great analogy for this. When I was in college back in the late 60s, early 70s, I went to an all-women's college. And the way we met guys was to go to these things called mixers. I only survived two of them, but the idea of the thing was you walked in the door, you were elbow to elbow, you circulated around this room, and you were looking for a guy that you might be interested in spending time with and getting to know. Well, I think it's a little bit like that with subjects. We're in this world, and they're all around us. They're on TV, they're on the radio, they're people we talk to, have interesting things to say. And the idea is you have to pick one that you would like to spend time with. And sometimes after just a small amount of conversation with that subject, you realize that you do not want to spend any more time with that subject at all. You uncover some kind of a thing you don't like, you find out the subject or the person is a scoundrel and you don't want to know any more about them. And it goes like that. But I think just as with these mixers, as you're circulating around, all of a sudden there comes this moment and you see a subject and you think, I might want to get to know you a little bit. You do some research, you find out some things about the subject, and there is this spark. And you find yourself in what I'll call a committed relationship. You know that you're going to be spending time with this subject for 6 months to maybe 6 years. So it has to be the real deal. So I think it is a lot like forming a relationship with a person. I think if Andrea were at a mixer and stumbled on Edith Wharton, she just would have passed by. And if I had stumbled on Dave the Potter, I probably would have thought he was interesting, but moved on. So mm-hmm. it has to do with who Andrea is, who I am, what we're interested in. And I get people, I don't know if you get this, but I get people all the time saying, why? You should really write about this.
And a lot of times those suggestions are the very things that don't capture me. But with Dave the Potter, I think it was some very concrete things. First of all, I grew up during the civil rights era. I've always been interested in people that are underrepresented and people who were not in positions of power. So I think that right there interested me, and I'd read a fair number of slave narratives before I ever even thought about writing about Dave the Potter. And then I've also worked with clay a lot. I love clay. I know what it feels like. So all of that would not require any research. I have an affinity for the material. And one of our daughters is also very much a potter. So I've been around pottery. I've watched people making pots. I've made pots. I've made sculptures. I've played with clay. Then I've written poems. I've written, you know, verses. I wrote when I was a child. I write poems still now. And so I think the writing, the clay, and the times that Dave grew up in, all of that, you know, came together for me right away. It was like, this is something I really, really want to, when I want to write about something, it's usually because I want to read about it. I want to read more and more, but there was hardly anything written about Dave. But, and then there are other subjects, like it happened, I went to an art exhibit and I wanted to write a book about the artist because the art was really interesting to me. But then when I actually went to meet the artist and talk to him, the spark wasn't there. He couldn't tell me anything about his life that sparked my interest, or at least not enough. And I just decided that would be a project that, it's like you said, I gave it a try, but I found that it didn't capture me enough that I really want to spend that much time with it. Or I thought that even if I spent the time with it, I just don't think that the story was there.
Mm-hmm. You know, what I just wanted to add one thing, and this, my very first picture book was not nonfiction, it was a retelling of a folk tale, and it was called Wicked Jack. And it was a kind of a scruffy, ornery folk tale from North Carolina, and I just decided I didn't want to tell that story. I wanted to tell a nice story. And in that case, I really think Wicked Jack stalked me for years until mm-hmm. I finally gave in and told that story. So, mm-hmm. And I just wanted to say too, Andrea, that I think I don't gravitate toward subjects that are, I don't know, as out front as maybe Dave the Potter is. I gravitate toward quieter subjects that I maybe have to tease out. For example, for Edith Wharton, you knew she was, you know, a heavyweight as far as a writer goes, but as far as finding out the bits of her life, I wouldn't call it heroic. I would call it something else, but much, much quieter. Mm-hmm. And I think somebody like Dave the Potter, or people have suggested that I write about you know, the women's suffragettes and things like that. I think that's too bold, too out there for me. I wanna write about mm-hmm. people that I have to kind of tease things mm-hmm. out of and, mm-hmm. and find something in there. And maybe that goes back again to the mixer analogy, and that that I'm looking for a different kind of human being than you are, different kind mm-hmm. of relationship there.
I think that I'm interested in people who are heroic in a way that is sometimes quiet heroism, like writing on a pot.
Okay.
You know, I'm not interested in Nat Turner. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
I think,
a good,
right. So maybe,
right.
Yeah.
So, Andrea, what are some books out now that you admire?
I read both fiction and nonfiction. I recently read Sonia Sotomayor's autobiography, and I actually read it in Spanish, though she wrote it in English. It came out in Spanish and English at the same time. It's very interesting for me to read a whole biography like that in a language that I don't know that well. It makes me pay attention a whole lot more uh-huh, just uh-huh. to understand it, and I really enjoyed that. I recently also finished a book by Elizabeth Berg that was an interesting, you know how you were saying sometimes people come to you and say, why don't you write about this? Well, someone went to her and said, well, someone actually wrote to her, she writes this in the book, and said, I would like you to write this story about my mother who is a quadriplegic. And somehow, after she read the letter, she was intrigued enough to contact the woman. Now, she wrote fiction, but she based it on this nonfiction story, and she was in touch with the woman who, you know, throughout to get a lot of information from her about her mother. So that was kind
interesting.
Of interesting that
Very
actually
interesting.
Somebody did that. That was started as nonfiction idea, but her book is fiction. And I thought that was really interesting. Now, a lot of people think because I write for children that I read a ton of children's books, but I read mostly adult books. I read a fair number of biographies. I also read children's books, but more because I teach children's literature and I read the books that I'm teaching, of course, over and over. And so I become, you know, so that I know them inside out. But I'm not one of those people that reads every children's book that comes out at all.
Mm-hmm. I'm not either. But just recently I did read a picture book called Revolutionary Friends, and it's about George Washington and the Marquis de Lafayette and their friendship. Mm-hmm. And it's by Selene Castrovilla, and it's just the kind of picture book I love, nonfiction picture book. It's got this light, humorous style, very packed with information. But just it comes across effortlessly. It's mm-hmm. a really good book. David McCullough's, I feel the same way you do, Andrea, on the adult books. When it comes to nonfiction, I read mostly adult nonfiction. David McCullough's John Adams was the one that mm-hmm. inspired Edith Wharton for me, because I read that book and it was so full of quotes. I thought, why aren't there children's books that use the real quotes, so you can hear the subject speaking and the people speaking? And the way he did that was just that. It was so seamless. It was almost as if all these people were speaking out of letters and diaries and things like that. Well, I found out when I launched on Edith why children's book writers don't do that, because you have to track down all the copyright information and get permissions rights and all of that, which it could be that if I hadn't been far enough along in the book when I discovered what that was going to take, I might have quit. But I was too far along, so I had to barrel ahead and do all that stuff. But so the other book that I read recently is called The Tiger, and it's by John Valant. It came out in 2010. And I guess the reason I thought of that is because it's on a subject I wouldn't read about. It's about the environment. It takes place in Russia. It's just not something I would naturally find. It got really good reviews, and that's why I ended up reading it. And it just covered such a wealth of information. And the subtitle is A True Story of Vengeance and Survival. And really, for an absolute piece of nonfiction with no fictionalized dialogue or anything, this thing was a page turner. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. And I guess I love to read things like that to find out how people are grabbing me, how these mm-hmm. nonfiction writers are grabbing me, and especially on a subject that, as I say, I wouldn't have approached.
Yeah, I felt normally. That way when I read Devil in the White City. It's like, wow, this reads like fiction. It's kind of amazing.
Uh-huh. That's why Eric Morrison?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay. Well, Connie, Andrea, thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
So we've been talking with Connie Nordhelm Wooldridge and Andrea Chang. Connie's two books we've been talking about are Just Fine the Way They Are and Edith Wharton, The Brave Escape of Edith Wharton. And Andrea's book is Etched in Clay. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.